What's up, Writing Better? It's me, your host, Timmy Bauer, and my guest today is Alice Sullivan. Alice, thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
Thank you so much for having me. Pleasure to be
The
here.
topic that we are talking about today is how do ghostwriters find success using Readzy? And you have a very interesting thing. You charge $150,000 per client. And I know so many ghostwriters that are not charging nearly that price. So I want to talk to you about how does a ghostwriter get to that point where they are able to charge so much? And then when we talked in our last conversation, you were like, "Well, I'm not charging a million yet." So I'm excited to pick your brain.
Of course.
But before I do that, could you just give some context? How long have you been a ghostwriter? How did you get into this? Like, what's been your journey like as a ghostwriter?
Sure. So I have been in book publishing for 23 years now. I was hired right out of college by one of my professors to edit his content. And then when I realized, oh my gosh, I can make money doing this, giving my opinion and, helping people correct their papers and their books, I started to apply to, every place locally. And Nashville is a big publishing hub. So I started writing for magazines. I started working at a children's publishing house. I was eventually hired by Thomas Nelson Publishers, which several years ago was purchased by HarperCollins. And that is where I got my true and official start being mentored in the book publishing, in traditional book publishing. 13 years ago, I decided to go out on my own, and I have been a freelancer ever since. So that's my journey.
So 13 years ago, when you went out on your own,
Yes.
what were you charging for ghostwriting back then?
So I was doing more editing when I left the corporate world, and I was charging, probably $18 an hour, $15 an hour. And I was charging that because when I worked at the publishing house, those were the rates that I was paying as a managing editor. That's what I was paying the editors. So
Gotcha.
that's all I knew.
What does that break out to per project for like a typical book?
So yeah, gosh, it depends, but you could get paid, I don't know, 500 to 700 a book at that rate, which
Okay.
is okay. But
I think most people would say that's like way too low.
depends on the work you're doing. Yeah, if it's developmental stuff and you're really in the work and you're having to move stuff around, that's not near enough. If you're just proofreading something that's already been typeset and designed and you're picking out missing commas and, headers that are wrong, then that's maybe okay. But yeah, that's all I
So
knew.
when did you start ghostwriting?
I started ghostwriting in 2003.
Okay.
I was picked up by the publishing house strictly to do ghostwriting before I even knew that's what I was doing.
Gotcha. And then when you went out on your own, you were mostly doing editing.
I was
Now,
mostly doing editing and some ghostwriting, but I will tell you, like, my very first two ghostwriting projects that I was hired at for the publishing house were $1,200 a piece. And
gotcha.
I'm pretty sure that the very first book I did on my own was 5,000. I remember many years where my rate was between 10 and 12,000.
Yeah, okay. So you hung out in that price point for a while,
Yes.
and then when did you start increasing from there?
8 years into being a freelancer,
Okay.
I had a conversation with my lawyer who she was reviewing some contracts, and I just sort of offhandedly said, "Hey, by the way, I know you do a lot of entertainment law and IP law. Are my rates competitive with my peers?" And she said, "No, you're charging less than half, and you have twice the experience." But so that was my big shock, like, oh my gosh. But I had not had any of those conversations before, because coming out of the corporate world, I had already gotten my hand slapped twice for talking about salary. There was this, I think it's illegal now, but back when I was working at the publishing house, you were not allowed to talk about how much you made because they paid everybody different prices, and notoriously the men were paid more than the women. And just all sorts of craziness, and they didn't want you to have conversations. And so when I left and became a freelancer, it never occurred to me that that rule no longer applied. I just didn't do it. And so it wasn't until my lawyer said what she said that I was like, gosh, I need to start having these conversations with my peers because I have no idea what they're charging.
Yeah, I don't think that's a thing anymore, but it definitely was a big deal for a while. And one of the great things about contract work is there's no such, you don't have to like, no, I'm going to ask everybody. Like I ask everybody on this that comes on this podcast what they charge because I want to get a feel for what's common in the industry. Mm-hmm. For me personally, like my story, when I came up with the idea for Dinosaur House, which is my kids' book production company, I started off, it was just me and an outsourced design team and that I was paying a subscription price for. And I was like, okay, so I'm going to ghostwrite their kids' book off of a Zoom call. And then I'm going to send the work with the illustration notes to the outsourced design team. And then what I get back is going to be the kids' book. And then I package that and publish it. And that's the service. And I had no idea what to charge for it. And friends of mine were just like, just charge a premium for your time. Like how much time does it take you to do the project? And I was like, a few hours, honestly. They were like, just charge $500. I was like, who's going to pay $500? And then like, literally, like I was in a group of people. They were like, I'll buy one. I'll buy one. I'll buy one. And somebody else was like, I'll buy two. And so my first price was $500.
Yeah.
And then every client that I got from there would sign on. And then they would say, I'm in. And also you're charging way too little. Like, but give me that price. But your next client needs to pay a lot more.
Yeah.
And then I just steadily increased my price from there.
Yeah, that's really what I did too. After I had that conversation, I remember a big thing for me was I moved up to 30,000, and that felt uncomfortable because I was hanging out in the 10 to 12, you know, but I moved up to 30. From 30, I went to 50. Then I went to 65, then I went to 75, 95, 125, and now I'm at 150. So it has been a gradual progression over many years. But with more time in the industry, with better processes, I feel far more confident now at what I'm charging than I ever have.
Yeah. I've talked pricing with so many different people because when you run a business, like a business where you're like paying employees or contractors or whatever, it's and you're in circles of other people that are also doing that, pricing is like a regular conversation that you're having, and everybody the focus it's very funny because in the people that I hang out with, everyone is trying to encourage everyone to charge more. But not because they would pay that money. They're like, well, someone will pay that. And it's just very hard, I think, when you are either an entrepreneur or a solopreneur to get your head around this idea that there are people out there that will pay these prices that you wouldn't even think about paying.
Right.
And so maybe you could speak to that a little bit. Like when you jumped from 12-ish K to 30K, how did that affect your business?
Well, it alienated a lot of people. I had some uncomfortable conversations because the first thing that happened when I started telling people what my rates were, I lost a lot of clients. And that was terribly scary, right? Oh my gosh, because now I'm dependent on this freelance gig to pay all my bills and I'm losing a lot of clients. So there's a lot of anxiety. But what I found is when I was confident in saying that's what I charge and I already had experience to show what I had done, it only really took me one or two people to say yes at 30, and I would have been doing the same work of taking on four or five people. So I was making the same money or more with half as much work. And so it took me having more conversations. More people said no than who said yes. But that's how it's gone every single time. Every time I've raised my rate, there have been far more people who have said, I can't afford you. I'm sure you're worth it. Can't do it. So, but it's far more no's than yeses, but it only takes one or two yeses every time.
Yeah. What would you say to somebody that's on the fence about this? They've been feeling the squeeze for a long time. about their price,
Mm-hmm.
but they're afraid to increase it. And there's a lot of different reasons that people are afraid to increase it. And I'd be really curious to know what your reasons were that you were afraid to increase it. But like some of the ones that I can think of would be like having a bunch of clients say no, feeling like you're ripping people off, like feeling like this is one that I've felt, which is like, if I know that I can do this service at 3K, how am I not ripping someone off if I charge 10K? So like that's a mentality. I'd be curious to hear what you would have to say to that.
You know what? I've never had that specific worry at all. I think a lot of my issues around money coming from a woman raised in the church in the South, there's all sorts of beliefs wrapped up into that, one of which is you should be glad you have a job at all. You should, I've heard this line several times from people in the faith-based spaces, is that you should give me a discount because we share the same faith or something like that. You should be doing me a favor. And then, of course, just made me mad. But I think for me, I just realized I know that I am capable and I give excellent work and excellent service. And it's a dishonor to myself to not charge an appropriate rate when I know I can deliver excellence. And it took me a long time to get to that point. But that's where I am right now.
How does someone figure out what an appropriate rate is?
So it's about having those conversations. A great place to look is the EFA, Editorial Freelancers Association. If you have no idea where to start, that's a great place. They have a drop down on their website that talks about current prices for various, everything editorial for writing, editing, typesetting. I personally think their rates are a little bit low and outdated, but if you have no idea what to charge, that's a good place to start. And if you ever have somebody who comes back to you and says, you're charging too much, you can show them, like, this is an association and this is what they say I should be charging. Yeah, so everybody is going to come to their own pricing in their own time. Some people will never feel comfortable charging half as much as what I do, and you know what? That's okay. There's really no difference between me charging what I charge now and 250. I just haven't gotten there yet in my head. I'm going to still deliver the same excellent experience. I'm still going to, deliver the same work. This is, of course, my opinion, but I think that's the only difference when you get up there in the numbers is are you still giving great service? The difference is more so in your confidence and what you feel comfortable charging.
Oh man, so many things to talk about. So okay, this last thing that you said, 150, no difference between charging that and 250. Like, that's what I'm talking about. So like for me personally, my own hang up around that is I go like, how am I not like how can I get behind this if like if the quality of my service is not increasing? How can I justify going from 150 to 250?
I don't know. I think that's a personal thing. Like I would like to say that every book I write, I learn a little bit more. I get better
Sure.
with my processes, I get better with my timelines.
And I
Some
would say the same thing. I would say
yeah,
the same
yeah.
thing.
And some of my clients I'll throw in a cover design or I will throw in, a few calls with a marketing person. So there are various things you can do depending on the client's needs that add value. Another big thing that I do is a lot of coaching, a lot of hand holding, honestly, because I do a lot of trauma memoir. And it's not just helping somebody tell your story, I'm helping them relive some pretty crappy stuff. And that takes physical time and emotional energy. And so that is, all of that adds into what I'm able to offer. I'm creating a safe space for them. So yeah, I mean, to the question, what's the difference? I don't know that there is a difference, really. I know there are I know of somebody, another writer, who charges $350. And
Yeah.
I've seen that person's work, and I won't disparage it, but I know that I can match it or do better.
Yeah.
And the only difference is the numbers that we're saying.
Man, so what's it gonna take for you to get there in your head and then start quoting people that price?
So for me, when I decide on a price, it says 150, hold the boundary. I have to start manifesting. I don't know if that sounds weird or not. I have to start thinking about it. Like, all right, when I have the conversation, this is what's going to come out of my mouth. I practice having these conversations with like the wall. I have to be comfortable with saying what my price is and then being quiet, because I have a tendency to say my price and then try and talk myself out of it. And you never want to do that, you know?
Yeah.
So I start saying it, I start visualizing it, I write it down. I think what I've already sort of decided in my mind is that next year at some point, I'm going to tip 200. And it only takes one person, what I've discovered. It only takes one person to say yes at my new rate. And then I have all this confidence because I thought, well, somebody said yes. More people,
Yeah.
yes.
Yeah, I wish I could say the same thing, but I have charged. So currently, I charge 10K for Dinosaur House, and I still have struggled. I even though I've gotten 4 clients at that price point, I still struggle with the confidence of like, hey, this is what I charge now. Yeah, I don't, I don't know what it would take for
Yeah.
that to change.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you can practice with family members, I guess, but do you think it's also, well, I think it's also finding your niche, like the clientele. So when I lost a ton of people at 30,000, it was just I had moved beyond that specific clientele, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, there are plenty of people who would
I
fit
think that's yeah.
really
I think
well.
that's another thing. So I'm probably not giving myself enough credit here because it's not like in sales conversations, my lack of confidence is showing. It's more like just kind of after the conversation or whatever. And each time someone closes, it does boost the confidence of going like, okay, there are people that will pay this price. But I there is an interesting phenomenon, and I think you're probably the perfect person to speak to this, of price as a filter. And I try to tell ghostwriters this, which is like price, we're all doing different things that filter in or out different types of customers. And we don't tend to think about price itself as a filter. Like when you charge a certain price and someone says, oh my gosh, you're crazy. All that's happened is you have filtered out somebody that you don't want to be working with anyways. And when someone agrees to that price, you have filtered in somebody that is a match for the kind of people that you want to be working with. And then those people, well, I don't know if this is the case for you, but those people tend to know other people that are also that type of person. And so you have filtered for the kinds of clients that are, just by changing your price, you have filtered for the kinds of clients that will pay that price.
And so consistently, I have received between, I think, 8 and 13 connections every month. People finding my website, messaging me, email me. And of those, 8 to 13, there may only be one, if any, who I'm even a match for at that price range. So again, it's a lot of no's, but I only need one yes, so it's fine. And in fact, I just had a conversation with somebody last week. This guy said, I chose you because you were the most expensive that I found online. And I have, if you've written this many books and you charge this, I'm expecting excellence. And I was like, that's
Yep.
exactly what you're going to
I
get.
had a sales conversation yesterday where I was talking to somebody that was shocked that I was charging so much money. And I just told her, I was like, the kinds of people that I am selling to, they are turned on by how much money I'm charging. Because the kinds of people that I'm selling to, they want to buy something that they're not going to have to worry about. They essentially want to pay a price that is like, at this price, they're set. They are working with somebody that they don't have to worry about getting shoddy work or anything like that. And they feel the higher price makes them feel that sense of confidence of like, okay, I am paying for a true professional that is going to give me professional work. I don't have to worry about anything going wrong. This is the
Right.
highest priced person in this market. And for somebody who $3,000 and $10,000 are both a minor fraction of their net worth, there's no difference in their minds between those two prices other than one's more and one's less. And like you said, they're attracted to the one that's more. How does it feel for you though, having to go through so many no sales conversations?
You know, I don't mind because I'm always able to refer them to somebody else, and that can be a whole new wing of residual income. You know, if you have referral fees with all these people, so it's very common in publishing, both the writing and the editing and everything else. If I refer a client, you know, there's a referral fee that's paid if you know, have that agreement with somebody. And you know, I don't do children's books, I don't do political books. Like, there's a whole range of books that I'm just not the right person for, but I know people in each of those categories, and I am so happy to say, like, hey, thank you so much for contacting me. I'm not the right fit for this, and here's why, but here are two or three people that I vouch for, and they're great, and you know, wish you the best. So I don't have a problem with that at all.
What's great about what you just said too is just how you've niched down. So you've niched down to the one kind of book that you are one of one at, that you're just extremely good at, you're very efficient at, you like doing them. And that's another thing. I just did a pre-interview yesterday with a ghostwriter that was saying that there essentially is no such thing as writer's block. Writer's block is just you trying to force yourself to do a project that you shouldn't be doing. And I think, you know, whether she's right or she's wrong, it's an interesting take. And obviously her overall take is writer's block is a signal to you that you need to be choosing different projects. But it's hard when you're charging a lower price to be choosy about the projects that you pick
That is true.
because, you know, versus if you got a large price and you're having tons of sales conversations and most of them are no's, you're zeroing in on the exact kind of projects that you want to be doing with the exact type of clients that you want to be doing. That's another thing I wanted to ask you about is type of clients. How have
Okay.
you experienced that your clients have changed as you've gone up in price?
So I would say overall, my clients now are all either, are they all CEOs? I think they're all CEOs right now. Yeah. So they're all like C-suite clients. They have bigger budgets. They are very familiar with, you know, running businesses. And so when I lay out a process to them, this is how the writing is going to go, they get it instantly. They are far easier to work with because I
Yes.
find that they're not micromanagers.
No,
I lay out the contract. Yeah, the higher the dollar amount,
the
I
more
feel
they want
like
to be
the more,
told what to do.
right. And the more freedom I have in the project, because in my contracts, I lay out all the deliverable dates and what that means, what you're getting from me when, and all I have to do is meet those, and that's it. You know, I'm abiding by the contract, and that seems to be perfect. So anyway, they have been, for the most part, easier to work with. What I have discovered is that people, in my own experience, when I've had conversations and people have really focused on the money as it being like, oh, I don't know, that might be too much for me, I'm worried about my finances, I have to send three kids to college, all those things, like, those are all valid. But when they bring them up in conversation to me, and I have still gone forward with the book, there are always issues because I think they were hesitant to begin with.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Oh man, there's so much that we could talk about this, but we're pretty much out of time and I didn't ask you about Readsy. I want to ask you about
ask
Readsy.
me.
Yeah, so for so when we talked in our first conversation, I asked you to break down like how your clients come to you and you said about 33% of them are referrals, about 33% come from Google search, which you hired an SEO contractor to help you with. And then the other 33% come through Readzy. So yes. I would love if you could talk about how a ghostwriter gets successful at using Readzy to get clients.
So I have been on Readzy since 2016, and I made sure that my profile, you know, is completely filled out. I have all the, you know, a huge list of books I've worked on. What I continuously hear is that when somebody sends me an email through Readzy, I respond quickly. And I don't know if that is always what seals the deal, because sometimes, most of the times, I'm on the higher end of the budget. But people appreciate responsiveness and enthusiasm when you're emailing them back about their story. And that's a very tiny thing, but it really does make a big difference. And so in the years that I've been on Readzy, I counted it up once. And so now it's probably close to 600. I've had 600 separate messages from them, different potential clients. And I think I've only signed maybe 18 or 19 at this point. So you can imagine that's a lot of no's.
Yeah.
But it's worth it, because every year I, you know, I make over six figures through their system. Yeah. So is that worth it? Yes, to me, I think it's worth it to just, you know, sometimes you just decline, sorry, it's not for me. And sometimes you have a conversation or several conversations, and at the end they say, hey, I love what you do and you sound amazing. I just can't hack that budget. Well, that's okay. It's just a small amount of time out of my day to potentially earn top dollar.
What's your time investment? How much time are you putting in Readzy?
Maybe 20 minutes a week.
Oh my goodness. Okay. That's so low.
Yeah, it's very low.
Is there anything else that you think you might be doing that is helping you to get clients through that platform?
Through Readzy? Encouraging my clients to write a review when the project is done. Again, a very simple part of their analytics, but I have a high response rate and I have a lot of 5-star reviews. And so when you type in ghostwriters in Readzy, I'm one of the top ones that pops up because of that.
Are you on any other platforms? Because I feel like Readzy might be well known in the ghostwriting space, but I don't know that the average person knows about Readzy.
Maybe not. And no, I'm not.
Okay. Interesting. So it's Readzy, it's Google, and it's referrals.
That's it.
I love it. You're such an interesting person to talk to, Alice. I would imagine that a ghostwriter who's listening to this probably has questions that they wish I would have asked. Mm-hmm. If you're listening on Spotify, there is a way that you can write in a question. And then I'm sure that I could reach back out to Alice to ask the question. Alice, where are you most active that listeners could connect with you?
Ooh, well, if you have LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Alice Sullivan, yeah.
Awesome. So that's Alice Sullivan, S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N. Alice, thank you so much for taking the time to be on my show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.